We emerged onto the wide ledge of stone, and Beta was there with torches. As Beta passed them out to a selected few, I wondered if the Bikura reserved fire for ritual purposes only. Then Beta was leading the way, and we descended the narrow staircase carved into the stone. At first I crept along, terrified, clutching at the smooth rock and searching for any reassuring projection of root or stone. The drop to our right was so sheer and endless that it bordered on being absurd. Descending the ancient staircase was far worse than clutching at vines on the cliff face above. Here I had to look down each time I placed a foot on the narrow, age-slickened slabs. A slip and fall at first seemed probable, then inevitable. I had the urge to stop then, to return at least to the safety of the basilica, but most of the 70 were behind me on the narrow staircase, and there seemed little chance that they would stand aside to let me pass. Besides this, and even greater than my fear, was a nagging curiosity about what was at the bottom of the staircase. I did pause long enough to glance up at the lip of the cleft, 300 meters above, and to see that the clouds were gone. The stars were out, and the nightly ballet of meteor trails was bright against a sable sky. Then I lowered my head, began a whispered recitation of the rosary, and followed the torchlight and the Bikura into the treacherous depths. I could not believe that the staircase would take us all the way to the bottom of the cleft. But it did. When? Sometime after midnight, I realized that we would be descending all the way down to the level of the river. I estimated that it would take us until noon of the next day, but it did not. We reached the base of the cleft shortly before sunrise. The stars still shone in the aperture of sky between cliff walls that rose an impossible distance on either side. Exhausted, staggering downward step by step, recognizing slowly that there were no more steps, I stared upward and wondered stupidly if the stars remained visible there in the daylight as they did in a well I had lowered myself into once as a child in Villefranche-sur-Saône. "Here," said Beta. It was the first word uttered in many hours and was barely audible over the roar of the river. The 70 stopped where they were and stood motionless. I collapsed to my knees and fell on my side. There was no possibility that I could climb that stairway we had just descended. Not in a day. Not in a week. Perhaps never. I closed my eyes to sleep, but the dull fuel of nervous tension continued to burn inside me. I looked out across the floor of the ravine. The river here was wider than I had anticipated, at least 70 meters across, and the noise of it was beyond mere noise. I felt that I was being consumed by a great beast's roar. I sat up and stared at a patch of darkness in the opposing cliff wall. It was a shadow darker than the shadows, more regular than the serrated patchwork of buttresses and crevices and columns that mottled the face of the cliff. It was a perfect square of darkness, at least 30 meters to a side. A door or hole in the cliff wall. I struggled to my feet and looked downriver along the wall we had just descended. Yes, it was there. The other entrance, the one toward which Beta and the others even now were walking, was faintly visible in the starlight. I had found an entrance to Hyperion's labyrinth. Did you know that Hyperion was one of the 9 labyrinthian worlds? Someone had asked me on the dropship. Yes. It was the young priest named Hoyt. I had said yes and dismissed the fact. I was interested in the Bikura. Actually, more in the self-inflicted pain of my own exile. Not the labyrinths or their builders. 9 worlds have labyrinths. 9. out of 176 web worlds, and another 200-some colonial and protectorate planets. 9 worlds, out of 8,000 or more worlds explored, however cursorily, since the Hegira. There are planetary archaeohistorians who devote their lives to the study of the labyrinths. Not I. I had always found them a sterile topic, vaguely unreal. Now I walked toward one, with the 70, as the Khan's River roared and vibrated, and threatened to douse our torches with its spray. The labyrinths were dug, tunneled, created more than 750,000 standard years ago. The details were inevitably the same, their origins inevitably unsolved. Labyrinthine worlds are always Earth-like, at least to 7.9 on the Solmev scale, always circling a G-type star, and yet always restricted to worlds that are tectonically dead, more like Mars than old Earth. The tunnels themselves are set deep, usually a minimum of 10 kilometers, but often as deep as 30. And they catacomb the crust of the planet. On Svoboda, not far from Pachem's system, over 800,000 kilometers of labyrinth have been explored by remotes. The tunnels on each world are 30 meters square and carved by some technology still not available to the hegemony. I read once in an archaeological journal that Kemp Holzer and Weinstein had postulated a fusion tunneler that would explain the perfectly smooth walls and lack of tailings. But their theory did not explain where the builders or their machines had come from, or why they had devoted centuries to such an apparently aimless engineering task. Each of the labyrinthine worlds, including Hyperion, has been probed and researched. Nothing has ever been found. No signs of excavation machinery, no rusting miners' helmets, not a single piece of shattered plastic or decomposing stimstick wrapper. Researchers have not even identified entrance and exit shafts. No suggestion of heavy metals or precious ores has been sufficient to explain such a monumental effort. No legend or artifact of the labyrinth builders has survived. The mystery had mildly intrigued me over the years, but never concerned me. Until now.